Hey, welcome back to Textual Healing. I'm your host, Mallory Smart. And today, I'm joined by horror writer extraordinaire, Brianna Malotki. But before getting too much into her, I'd like to remind listeners that you can support Textual Healing by following us on Twitter, at PodHealing, or checking out our website, textualpodcast.com. You can subscribe to us on Spotify, rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even check out our Patreon, which is linked on our Twitter page. But back to the actual show. Brianna is a writer based in the Pacific Northwest. In addition to being a member and on the social media team for the Horror Writers Association, she's also co-chair of the Seattle chapter. She has work in Beautiful Tragedies 2 and 3, The Dire Circle, the Nottingham Horror Collective, Under Her Skin, and Horror Scope, a Zodiac Anthology, Volumes 1 and 4. In fall of 2023, her debut horror poetry collection, Fashion Trends, Deadly Ends, was released. Malotki's next collection, Lost Cherry, will be published with January Ember Press, fall of 2024. She also has a romance novella series, Sugar and Steam, written under the pen name of Tori Fields. In this episode, we chat about weird weather, unappreciated vampire movies / TV shows, cats, writing horror poetry, maybe even some erotic stuff. Who knows? Anyways, here's Brianna. So, where are you right now?
I live in Redmond, Washington. So, basically Seattle, but not really Seattle.
I'm so jealous right now.
Where are you located?
I'm in Chicago, but I've always loved the Pacific Northwest.
I just moved here from Champaign, Illinois, like a year ago.
Oh, man. You came from Chambana?
Yeah. So you know exactly where it was. Yep. Yeah.
I come from a family where everybody went to U of I. I'm the one who didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So very familiar with that Illinois weather. Do not miss it.
Yeah, we had a tornado here a couple days ago.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, ooh, tornado season came early.
Yeah, that's like a April thing.
Blew all of our minds here. I mean, I think everybody was on Twitter being like, are you hearing the siren? Is this happening?
Is this real?
I mean, I didn't hear it at first because I was... no shit watching Twister.
Oh my god.
So I'm just like, I see my cat react and I'm like, what the hell's the matter with her? And I'm just like, you know what? She does this if it's really bad weather. So I look outside and I'm like, oh my god, it's storming. Where'd that come from?
That is insane.
But it was a very fun 3 hours of me hanging in the bathroom with my cat because I live in an apartment.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to go to, like, the stairwells or something, but I made it very clear to my husband and everyone else I was on Twitter with. I was like, I don't want to get to know my neighbors like that.
Right. That's not really.
Like, I'm not here to make friends. I'm just here to live.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, I could definitely tell that some people were not used to the Illinois weather.
Yeah.
So, is there anything like that in the Pacific Northwest?
Not really so far. Like, it kind of has been slushy, so not really snow, but, like, thicker than rain. And that's kind of been it for me.
Can I move in with you?
I mean, my cat's a dick, but...
Oh, damn, my cat's a little bitch.
Yeah.
No, that's not gonna work.
I'm like, We're capped out at the, we have two cats and a small dog, and our one cat is a dick. Otherwise, we definitely have one more pet, but he does not do well with new.
See, I want to get a dog, you know, whenever we get out of an apartment and live somewhere that we could actually fit a dog, but I don't think my cat will allow it.
We have a small dog, and I was like, okay, we can get a cat, but it has to be a kitten, so he's bigger than it for at least a little bit, you know, because both of our cats are twice his size, and he doesn't even care. We did not have to worry about him. He's just like, I don't like them. I don't care. I want your attention, and they're in the way.
See, it's my hope to get, if I get a dog, like, right in its puppyhood so my cat can train it.
Yeah. See? Yeah, same kind of premise.
You know, it's like, I will love you, dog, but the cat has to teach you the rules. Sorry.
Right. You got to listen to the cat.
See, I feel like we're just writing a very lame, like, young adult book now. For people who are into horror, I feel like this is beneath us.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I do also write romance, so could be a very little meet-cute plot.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it could be. So that is actually a very interesting line to straddle, romance and horror.
It is. Yeah.
Like, that's like a dual personality thing fighting. How'd you get it that way?
So, my probably favorite subgenre to read, I guess, is, like, vampire romance, where there's a little bit of killing and all of that, but there's also some steamy mixed in, and I think that's just one of those. You know, age-wise, Twilight was really huge, and my parents let me go from that to True Blood, wildly different age groups. And
I mean, they're all horny, though.
Right? And so, like, ever since junior high, I've loved vampire books, and a ton of my horror poetry has, like, a little bit of romance, like, not quite gothic romance, you know, that sort of style, but, you know, maybe there's a female serial killer and she lures people in that way.
female serial killer premise. I love that.
I love writing, like, badass female killers. And so
I feel like there's not enough of those.
Exactly. And so a lot of my horror poetry is kind of that mix of things. And it was one of those, well, I like reading romance. You know, it's a good couple hours and you're done, and it's a good palate cleanser, and maybe I should try it. And I tried, and I submitted a short story, and the publisher really liked it, but it wasn't a good fit for what I submitted it to. And they were like, we would actually like this short story to be a novella. What are you thinking? And I was like, sure, I can do that. Why not? And then now I have a whole little novella series, and and I still get to write about female killers. Separately. So
I think Hannah Montana would call that the best of both worlds.
Oh yes, that is.
Yeah, I might be being too dorky now.
No, perfect.
Like, you brought me to that level though. You brought up Twilight.
I brought up
True
Twilight
Blood, so.
Yeah. So
millennial here. I don't know where you are on that spectrum.
Yep. I turn 30 next month, so right in that millennial. Yep.
So we're there.
Yep.
Okay. See, I was the exact age of the Twilight characters when Twilight came out.
So you were, yeah.
It was fun. And then True Blood was actually really cool because I remember at Hot Topic, they actually sold the True Blood drink.
I don't know if you ever saw one of those bottles on my bookshelf.
You still held on to yours, too.
For some reason, yeah, like, I got it for Christmas. I drank all of them. Took me forever to drink the last one. And that bottle has...
bad.
I don't remember it at all, so it was probably horrible. But it is... I have one bookcase that is essentially all vampire, supernatural, paranormal books, and it's on there. With some, you know, cool Funko Pops because a little bit of my teen years is still there. So,
okay. What is it with Funko Pops? How did that get into this world?
I have no idea.
Because I just started getting gifted those.
And oh,
I was
really?
Like, all right. Yeah, like people would just suddenly like say, I have like a Dale Cooper Twin Peaks one right here next to me. I have a Seinfeld one. And okay. I got to tell you, if you look at Seinfeld, it's just a random guy. Like if it doesn't say Jerry Seinfeld beneath, you would be like, he's just a very big headed dude.
You know, I don't know. In high school, it was really cool, I guess. I got a couple, you know, I have like Buffy and Willow and Harley Quinn. And then suddenly that was, oh, Brianna likes Funko Pops. And, you know, I have three Gerard Way Funko Pops on my desk by my computer. Like,
we'll try not to read too much into that.
Like all the different versions, and I have like a whole little Batman section. Same thing. People are like, "Oh, I know you have a Funko Pop, and you like this." Boom.
Are you by your bookshelf right now?
No.
Oh, see, that's the annoying thing. It's almost everyone I know. Now you're like the exception. When they do the podcast, they're right next to their bookshelves. And I was just going to be like, can you just name me three books that are right behind you?
Oh, I mean, nope.
It sounds like it's a very like specialized, like custom bookshelf there with like just all vampire and horror stuff. I dig it.
Yeah, we have a couple of bookshelves and they're all downstairs. And my office is upstairs, so I don't.
Would it like totally throw you if you like are trying to like work and there's like all these books? Like, would they distract you or?
They would, yes. I have a bookshelf by my desk, but it is all of my apparel costuming research books. So they're not like sit down and fun reads. They're, this is how you pattern, this is different fabrics. These are textbooks. So
it's such a different genre. Yeah.
Yes.
But okay, how about you tell us a little bit more about yourself other than that you're really into kinky vampires and you have a really douchey cat.
Yep, that's clearly what I'll be known for forever.
Kinky vampires.
Yeah, so I do. I write horror. I'm the chapter head of the Seattle Horror Writers Association chapter. I'm also on the Horror Writers Association social media team. So I do a lot of our TikTok content and all of that behind the scenes, like make graphics and stuff. And I really like kind of exploring different little topics that aren't necessarily written about a lot when I approach horror. And yeah.
You know, like female serial killers and everything.
Exactly.
You know, because really, I'm trying to think if there is a book I've ever read that was like about a really great female serial killer. Because it has to be fictional because we don't actually have a great female serial killer in our culture, sadly.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm sure
sadly,
there are some.
Because we need to break one glass ceiling, you know?
Yeah. But I just, I'm a staff writer for Monstrous Femme. And it's an online magazine. They do quarterly issues, and I just started, so like my first piece won't be out until the end of March issue. But my whole, you know, you should hire me because, and I really like writing about female serial killers, and I don't think that there's enough of that in horror, along with, you know, a lot of queer leads or side characters that are not just there to be killed off or have a laugh. Like, they are the main character and their queerness does not affect the plot. Like, that's not the point. It's just, you know, maybe it's said, maybe it's not, but those are kind of my jams that I'm shifting my focus towards.
Yeah, right now, like, my mind is stuck on a movie I saw during the summer that just feels like a lifetime ago because I've been, like, all around the world since then and everything. But there was a slasher flick about a non-binary person who was at a conversion camp, and they actually are, like, the final person.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's on my list of things to watch, but...
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's slowly becoming a topic.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's one of those things, you know, there are a lot of really great anthologies where it's all the writers are queer, all the characters are queer, but I would really like it to just be another one of those things. Like, it doesn't have to just be specific, if that makes sense. Like, they're there among everything else.
Have you ever written, like, do you have any intention to write, like, an actual, like, novel about, like, a female serial killer?
Not at the moment. I would love to write about it.
That'd be a great miniseries.
Yeah.
So, like, what would, like, your ideal female serial killer, what is their motive?
My gut response is revenge, you know, maybe a wrongful death or something, you know, best friend got hit by a drunk driver or something, or, you know, revenge is always a really good motive.
Revenge is a good motive, definitely.
But I think it would be cool just to write one where she just likes to kill. That's it.
I was going to say, I was just, like, watching Scream, and I was going to be like, you know what? There is the whole thing where it's like, also, motives are incidental. And then you have your Stu-like character where it's like, why is he killing? And it's like, because he likes it.
Yeah. Like, we could have a female do that. She's just having fun. It's a game. Like,
it's just what she's doing. And for that, I would say maybe we do have female serial killers out there, but they're just really good at it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they are.
I mean, I think, see, that's how you know that maybe they probably are, because I think if I were to go on, like, a cool serial killing escapade, sounds fun to say it that way, too, with girls, isn't it? Right. It's an escapade. We're not going crazy. I feel like I'd be able to cover my shit up pretty well.
Right. Well, and it's what the whole, you know, everyone watches all the crime shows.
Yeah, see, we're the ones who know how to cover those tracks because we've been watching that.
We've seen everyone's mistakes.
We've learned. Now I'm just imagining you just taking notes, being like, all right, yeah, that's how they got fucked up.
Oh, my gosh. My partner is always just like, if you kill me, I don't want to be drowned. And I'm like, why would I kill you? And he's like, I'm just telling you that I don't want to be drowned. He's like, I know you watch these movies, you watch these true crime documentaries, and you write about killing people. I don't want to be drowned. And I'm like, okay.
See, you're giving off vibes then, too, because my husband never thought that I was going to be that way. Instead, all is happening is he gets weird nightmares now because I watch so many horror movies.
Yeah.
My husband. I mean, we have discussed how we would want to die, but not that way.
My husband started to watch Hannibal with me, and he was just like, I'm getting the weirdest dreams. We need to take a break. And I'm like, yeah, I get that.
But also, like, inside, really, but I really don't.
Yeah, like, I'm like, eh, it's fine.
It's pretty tame.
Yeah.
So... now I'm just thinking about all the cool, like, soundtracks to all the things you just mentioned. Like, Twilight is one of the reasons why I actually started this podcast.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, Stephanie Meyer, she spoke a lot about how she listened to a lot of Muse and everything like that while writing Twilight.
Yeah, yeah. I will say, Twilight movies, amazing soundtracks.
Oh, if you're going to watch Twilight, just go in for the vibe, if not anything else.
Right.
It's a mood changer for sure.
Oh.
So are there any like songs that you keep going back to while you write?
Oh, so, and this kind of goes with like the romance and the horror. When I have specific projects I'm working on, I try to sort of make a playlist. So that way I can go from writing horror to, you know, being in the right mindset where I left off. These are the vibes.
It's pretty cool though. Yeah.
But, I just finished up my horror poetry manuscript, and one of the songs that I just kept replaying while I was editing was, let's see, I think it's called Mercy by Rosenfeld. The album is Blood and Porcelain.
Wow.
And it kind of really, like, the vocals, the lyrics, everything just really felt like, okay, yes, this is exactly what the manuscript is emanating. So.
And does that differ at all from, like, what you typically listen to, or?
A little bit, yeah. I hadn't heard his stuff before. And then it popped up on my suggested feed while I was doing work. You know, sometimes I'll just click and let YouTube, because I use YouTube Music. Sometimes I just, you know, they'll say, pick a song, and they'll make you a playlist. And so sometimes I just do that, and it was on there, and I heard it, and I was like, oh, this is good. And then I just listened to his whole album, and I was like, okay, we're adding this to different playlists. So
I feel like I need to do YouTube Music now. I do Spotify, and it doesn't ever give me anything like, here's something you'd like and you didn't know you liked it.
Okay. Yeah, I have a Google phone, and it used to be Google Play or whatever, and then it got, you know, now it's YouTube Music, which is fine, but it saved all my playlists, so I don't care. that's all that matters. But yeah, they have like a little quick picks, and it's usually a song that you've listened to before, or, you know, you have saved, and then it just generates a whole radio from it. So highly recommend. Cool. It's free.
Yeah. Spotify, you get your daily mix.
Okay.
Like they have four different options of your daily mix, which is very fun. Somehow Taylor Swift manages to seep her way into all of them.
Okay. Yeah.
Not by choice, by the way.
She has a variety, though. So.
Oh, she's in every genre, too.
Yeah.
If you just go for
the indie music.
So I can
definitely see, it getting. Yeah.
So she manages to seep her way in. But. Okay, so, like, what do you typically listen to? Like, you wake up in the morning, what are you turning on?
Oh, my gosh. I am probably playing Sleep Token or My Chemical Romance the beginning of my day when I'm drinking my coffee at my desk.
Damn, that has to be a banger.
That'll
wake you up, yeah.
You know, I know all the words. I can get in the zone. Not quite white noise, but.
Yeah, but if you listen to Sign over and over again, it almost does become white noise to you.
Yeah.
Like Famous Last Words or Sign, like, yes. I can just listen to that on repeat or Kill All Your Friends. Like,
yeah.
We're not dark and fucked up at all. No.
No, not at all.
Thank God no one can hear this conversation right now.
I really like Lana Del Rey and Orville Peck. And so that's kind of the it's kind of an either or sometimes, like it'll be those two or a little more vocal and slowed down. So
what is your favorite Lana song? I know, I had to put you there.
I'm going to go with Diet Mountain Dew for now.
Really?
That might be, I also like Art Deco.
I feel like we're in similar vibes. I like Born to Die.
Okay. Yeah. That music video is really cool.
Do you just finish your poetry manuscript?
I did. I sent it off yesterday to my publisher.
So you're just in the beginning stages, though, so you don't, like, have a final cover or anything like that?
No. So it'll be released this fall, but that's about the only thing that's decided.
How about the title?
Oh, it's going to be called Lost Cherry.
That seems fitting, yeah.
Yes. So it's a fragrance by Tom Ford. And one of the poems is inspired by that fragrance. And so I really liked the poem, and I thought it was just, I guess, quirky enough of a title. So.
I like it.
And it is kind of a blend of romance and horror in a way. It's this sort of what happens when mortals fall in love with very obviously evil creatures. So sirens, demons, vampires, but not like the sexy kind, just the I'm going to kill you kind.
Do you get like into demonology and stuff? I've been like going into like a weird hole with that lately.
I haven't, but it's definitely interesting. I will say that.
Yeah, I'm writing something currently that I'm starting to stray into horror territory. So I had to learn demonology as much of it as I could.
Okay.
So, like, do you do any deep research into, like, the weird evil entities that you use? Or is that something, like, you already have general knowledge of?
A little bit of both. So, like, one of the creatures I wanted to write about was banshees. And I knew it was an Irish folklore, and I thought I knew exactly like how the banshee's depicted, when it shows up, but that was one that I really, really looked into because there are a handful of different versions, and I didn't realize that like they only showed up to family members, and so I definitely did my research on that, but you know, with sirens, that's something I already had a good background in. I've written a couple poems about sirens before, so I've already had that. But typically when I want to write about a topic that I feel I'm lacking, I always do research.
What is your go-to research thing? I go into wiki holes. How about you?
Oh, usually I try and find like a book.
Okay, I'm like, do find my like wishy searching people who could recommend books too. So yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, does anyone know a really good book about like Irish folklore and, you know, all about borrowing books from the library and all that. But usually if I'm in a pinch, it's just like a Google search and seeing who has what information and are they a reputable source.
Do you ever get like weird looks from the librarian when they see like what you're getting? I live right across the street from a library, so I get books all the time, and yeah. I have the weirdest like mixture, and I throw DVDs in there too. And they're always horror and weird as hell things. I think the librarian here is concerned about me, but.
Oh my gosh. No, I haven't really gotten any. I will say one time we had our chapter meeting for my horror group in a library, and they we're like, what does the HWA stand for? And we were like, oh, it's Horror Writers Association. And she just kind of made this face and she's like, oh, like, okay. Horror's not for everyone.
I mean, the important part, though, is do you look like horror writers? Or is it one of those shocking things like, you people are horror writers?
You know, it is pretty comical because I feel like I don't look like a typical horror writer.
Nope.
But then all of my female friends in horror, you know, are pretty average. You wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, you write horror. So I'm like, ah, maybe I am.
I guess because
maybe I do look like a horror writer and I just don't know it.
Now that I am going like through my mind of famous horror writers, all the female ones, they just seem not timid, just, you know, your average looking person. You don't know the weird shit's going on in their mind.
Yeah.
But no, I have like two friends who are horror writers. They look the part though.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So no dressing up and getting witchy or going to vampire shit for you?
No. Not yet.
Well, I think maybe do a themed hangout with the horror writers.
That would be, yeah. There's a Crypticon Seattle in May, and me and my co-chair are having a table for our group. And he wants to coordinate our outfits. And so, like, one day we're doing fancy dress and because he's going to be on a panel. And then he was like, we should look like really pretentious writers. So I'm thinking turtlenecks. And I was like, ooh, I have berets.
Oh, God.
So.
You might already be one of them.
I know. So I was like, I think I have two berets somewhere. My background's in costume design. And mm-hmm. So I have a lot of random stuff that I kept over the years. And I was just like, let me know if you come up with any other ideas. I might have something else that we can dress up weird or whatever. We talked about doing horror character costumes, but I'm like, well,
who would you be?
I know. I feel like I would want to be something maybe like Coraline. Okay. Not quite horror, but comfortable.
Like kind of goth.
Yeah.
A little bit gothic. Yeah. So what got you started writing this way? Oh, actually, let's first, what got you started writing? And then we'll start going into in this direction.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I've always really loved reading and writing and all of that. It's something that I continued to do in college, even though it's not what I was there for. I kept writing, but it was more work-oriented writing, you know, marketing, writing articles, all that sort of thing. And I would still kind of do my own poetry and stuff, and then, but just for myself, not seeking publication. And then I would say, I think, because it was maybe 2019 when I started to just send stuff out, I was kind of not really enjoying my job and, you know, just feeling a little rough on life choices. And I was like, you know what? I have all of these poems. Why not just see what happens? And I just started submitting my stuff places and keeping track of it. And, you know, stuff started to get accepted. And I was like, oh, this is actually really cool. Like, I'm going to keep going. And I would find submissions that I was then making new stuff. And it was just really enjoyable. And I got just further into horror, and that's how I came to be about. I just kept doing it.
How did you, okay, almost everybody's story is like they're social media heavy and they're following all these publications. What's yours? Like, how did you discover where you were going to submit? Like, were you already like somehow following them? Oh, submittable?
Yep.
Okay.
I think I did a Google search of where to submit poetry, and submittable popped up. And I was like, oh, I think I used this in college because I already had an account. And and I would just, you know, bookmark places that didn't have a fee to submit stuff, and just kind of went from there. And I think after I had a few publications under my belt is when I then realized, oh, there's a lot of indie publishers on social media. And that was how I made a list of, you know, places where I could submit stuff to further down the road if I had something ready. So
it's a very fascinating thing. I'm on Submittable right now as we speak because I didn't know you could discover stuff via Submittable. I run Maudlin House, so I've only always been on the other end.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm just looking and be like, oh, I didn't know this existed.
And they have tags. So, like, you can filter it by just poetry submissions. You can filter it by horror submissions and, you know, by due dates and all of that. And I still use Submittable. I also use Horror Tree. That's probably my top one for horror specific places to submit, just because it has the different open submissions. So
I dig that vibe. Yeah, I do look stuff up as you say it. Sometimes I want to do it where I can pretend, be like, I totally know what you're talking about.
But oh, yeah.
So you didn't already have friends who are like writers and everything?
I did not, no.
So are you that person that like you have to explain it to your normie friends?
Yes, and they're very supportive, even if I don't think they really understand.
They never do.
I, you know, but they're supportive. They come to whenever I have a book signing. I've had friends come, even if they already have my book. They're like, no, we just wanted to come say hi and, you know, make it look like there's people here to talk to you. And I'm like, thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, that squad right there. Be like, we just want to make it seem like you have fans. We're here.
Right. Right. Yeah, it wasn't until I joined the Writers Association and kind of started deep diving on Instagram, like following people and all of that, that I made writer friends. So
have you met any of them in person, or they maintain the URL status instead?
Still just the digital friends, but I do have plans to meet up with some people in person, you know. One of the cool things is people can live states away, but you're still friends.
I would say that's almost how all of my writer friends are. It's frustrating because, you know, if you do have one that lives by you, they actually want to socialize a lot. And it's like, small doses.
Yeah. For me, it's great. Like the writing group, there's the Barnes & Noble by me is having this couple author panel, and I messaged everyone. I was like, this is unofficial chapter business, but I want to go to this, and I would be happy to get ice cream with people afterwards if anyone wants to sit next to me. And I had a couple people, you know, they're completely down to hang out, and I was just like, yes, awesome, someone actually wants to go to this with me. My partner is not a horror person, so.
Yeah, mine isn't either, but he for some reason goes along with it.
Yeah.
As I said, he's getting nightmares, though, so I need to slow it down on him.
Yeah. take a break.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, he was talking in his sleep the other night, and he mentioned the devil. And I was like, oh, I did something here.
Oh, no.
So he didn't even remember it either. That was really creepy. God.
Sounds so. Like a writing prompt. What it would really you do does. If your partner started talking to the devil in their sleep?
I think we know what you should write now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it justice. I don't think I'm a very good horror writer. I love horror, but it's very hard. It's a very specific way to write, you know, when it comes to, like, genre writing.
And I think that's one reason why almost all of my stuff is poetry, because that's just the format that I find the easiest to tell my stories.
Because you don't have to, like, create so much tension as much.
Yeah. I really also like with poetry, for me, there's that slight challenge of you're limited space-wise. You know?
Not an
most poetry is a page. You know? So you have that one page to tell a complete horror story. How do you do that? And so I really, it's, you know, I may never actually write a horror novel, but I love poetry.
Yeah, the fascinating thing is horror poetry. I think you're the only person I know who, like, really specializes in horror poetry. Most of them are into, like, novels and short stories.
Yeah. Okay.
So is there, like, a very big audience for that?
No.
You're selling yourself short.
I feel like it's getting bigger. And I don't know if that's the more involved in the horror community I get, the more I see it, you know, or.
Kind of like you were all here and I just didn't see it before.
Right. Exactly. You know, because poetry itself isn't for everyone. You know, people might branch out to different genres if it's a novella or a novel. But poetry is one of those things, like, a lot of the time people have to like poetry to then try different genres. So if they're not a horror person, they may still try a horror novel if it sounds interesting. But if they're not a poetry person, then they're probably not going to pick up your book of horror poetry. So
yeah, I think it's a very lit idea though. So what do you try and accomplish when you do your poems? Like, you're not trying to scare people, like, based off what I read.
I think I like
vibes,
like body horror poetry where you make people a little uncomfortable,
a little Cronenberg in you.
I was talking on this one podcast with another horror author about I have a book of poetry called Fashion Trends, Deadly Ends. And
I like your titles.
Thank you. And so that one is all poetry inspired by historical fashion trends that were deadly. So, like, I had a whole section on eye stuff, and she was just like, yeah, you know, this is making me so uncomfortable. I have to feel like I have to touch my eye and make sure everything's okay. And I was like, so that's kind of, you know, that's exactly what I want you to feel. I want you to be like, oh, and cringe and, you know, be uncomfortable. Not a lot of the stuff I write is downright scary. It's a little more psychological, like, ooh, I would hate that, or, you know.
So are you working on anything else now that you finished that manuscript, or are you just fully working on that just all the way through?
So I have a couple other small things that I'm working on. Big thing wise is I have a romance novella due in April, so I need to finish that. But I'm doing a lot of in-person events the next couple months, and so I'm trying not to take on a lot of projects at the moment.
Don't want to overload yourself where there's not enough coffee.
Right. Yeah. As I have both a Coke and a coffee on my desk right now.
I have a caramel macchiato. I'm here with you.
But, you know, I don't want to half-ass anything. And so I do try and make sure I have the time to commit to stuff. And so while I've been working on these different bigger projects, manuscripts, you know, I don't think I've submitted individual poems to stuff in months. So, locked in.
When you release, like, the manuscript, are you going to do any, like, cool release party kind of vibes?
Oh, I would love to do one. I'm hoping. I have a really good connection with the Barnes & Noble here. They've had me a couple times, and we're organizing a big horror event in May with a bunch of different authors. And so the moment I get my release date, I am talking to them about doing an actual launch party, because I would love to do a launch party. I haven't been able to do one yet. So
how do you visualize that?
I would definitely, I don't know. I feel like I would want to maybe have, not costumes required, but I would love if it overlapped with, like, you know, it's fall, people are in the mood for spooky things. They would definitely show up in costume. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Wow,
for
I'm just realizing
a horror release.
That there's a coffee shop I just discovered called October that's devoted to Halloween all year round. That would be perfect for you.
That would.
Is there any, like, cool specialty bookstores or anything by you?
There's one. There's a romance-only bookstore. Kinky. It's not by me. It's 2 hours away. But, like, I'm doing an event with them in April. That's the only one I can think off the top of my head. Like, there's a lot of great local bookstores, but they don't specialize in one thing. They're everything. So the romance era bookstore. Yeah, it's in Vancouver, Washington, and they're really fun.
I'm trying to imagine, like, if they have, like, a really, like, dedicated, like, customership situation, or if people are constantly, like, rediscovering it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, they do a book club. I know that. So they have to have a group of devoted people, for sure.
The book club definitely probably helps, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it your hope to ever have your book included in the book club?
I feel like that would just be an amazing accomplishment.
I feel like you have to go there and lobby for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be there in April.
See, yeah, you just nudge them. just keep
talk to
giving very, like, not subtle hints.
Right. This would be a great book club book. I dance, and at the studio, there's an instructor who really likes poetry, and I asked her, like, hey, what kind of poetry are you into? I can loan you some books, because she was looking for other books to read. And she told me, and I was like, oh, okay. You know, mentally, I'm like, you would love my poetry book. And I was like, how do I not just blatantly be like, buy my book? So I loaned her a couple of poetry books, and I slipped in my own book in there. And I didn't tell her, because I was like, maybe she doesn't know my last name. So maybe she'll read it and really like it. And, you know, and I saw her a week or so later, and I asked her, and she goes, I can't believe you gave me your book. And I was like, oh, did you caught that on. End up there? I was like, well, do you like it? But
see, you had a very good chance, though, of them not knowing your last name. That wouldn't work
for
me.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not going to tell you you should read my book, but I am going to loan it to you, and maybe you won't put two and two together. There's a lot of Briannas out there.
I really like the writer thing, where whenever someone's like asking for a book like recommendation, and somehow we all manage to fit, oh, I wrote something that is exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
But then sometimes you're like, oh, I was really reaching and was just totally self-obsessed for a minute there.
it's one of those, I would love more and more people to read my stuff, obviously. But I do sometimes get a little like, oh, I don't know if you would like my stuff, but maybe you want to check it out. I do just need to.
Are you the humble brag person?
Maybe.
See, I'm trying to like imagine like is the like craziest thing you would do to get people to pay attention though to your poetry? Like, how far are you willing to go?
I don't know. I already feel pretty bold when I talk to people at bookstores.
It's a very specific area to be talking to them.
I know. Well, like whenever I have a signing at a bookstore and people will be like kind of close and you just kind of stare at them like, I'm going to make you feel a little awkward, like you're going to have to talk to me.
See, if I have a book event, I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want you to buy my book.
I know. That's always I want people to buy my book, but I don't want them to ask me questions.
That's why I hate being on podcasts as the guest. Because it's like, I never know what you're going to ask me and I'm going to feel very awkward.
Yeah. I'm like, maybe at one point I'll no longer be nervous about interviews and such, but until then.
Until such time. I have to say, I haven't actually gotten over it much myself, and I've been doing it since I was 23, so.
Okay.
But I might just be a lost cause, you know, you could be much better. I mean, you're already a great guest, so unless you're freaking out and I can't see.
No.
See, with
I'm
me.
I'm fully caffeinated, so I think that helps.
Caffeine sometimes makes it worse for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, then I just like am a little jittery and stuff. So most people can't tell, though, if it's just an audio podcast, but if it's like a video one, like they're just like, you little fidgety.
I didn't realize until I watched one of the podcasts I was on. And then I think it was like kind of towards the beginning of publishing stuff. It was, I watched it and I didn't realize how much I talk with my hands until I watched that podcast. And I was like, okay, from now on, we film from like the clavicle up. Do not look at my hands.
See, I aim for the, my webcam is broken, even though it's really hard to actually sell that. It's not like it was in the aughts when it's like it was a separate webcam. Yeah, that could break.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, I'll tell you right now, I'm playing with the Slinky. That's just, I got caught on one podcast doing that where like the person was like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh shit, you could see me?
Oh.
Like, I forgot about that. I was just enjoying the Slinky.
I logged into a meeting and I thought it was only audio, no visual. And I was like taking nail polish. I was doing the nail polish remover. And I'm just sitting there doing this talking. And they were like, what are you doing? I was like, oh.
See, that's better though, then. Like, it's so fun when you get like lost in what you're doing and you don't even realize that people are staring at you and they're like, wait, what are you doing?
Right.
So, all right, before we wrap up, you're on Instagram.
Yes.
Do you have any other social media?
I use the Slasher app. It's a horror app. And I'm pretty boring. My handle's just my name, just like Instagram, Brianna Malotki. I'm also on TikTok, same handle.
I must say, like, hit me up on TikTok. I'm fascinated.
TikTok is fun because I post horror and romance. So everything else, it's kind of separated.
I dig it.
But so it is very much like a hodgepodge of things.
I just love when I actually meet writers who are on TikTok because I love seeing the different ways they use it to promote their writing.
Yeah.
Because I don't think any of us really have it set yet.
Yeah, TikTok is so weird as a marketing tool for me. I'm really on there just for cat videos, but I feel like that I should just promote my books anyways. So like my whole algorithm is just cat videos and, you know, cute animals, and then I post book videos.
All right, that was Brianna Malotki. Go to her website that will be listed in the show notes to check out all her dark and twisty content. I also recommend hitting up her Instagram at Brianna Malotki and her very wild TikTok videos at Brianna Malotki. Be sure to check the show notes for all the proper spellings and links. As always, please check out our Twitter at PodHealing and take a look at our website, textualpodcast.com. Show us support by going on to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a 5-star review, or subscribe to us on Spotify. And of course, don't forget to check out our Patreon. You can find a link to it on our Twitter or Google it, whatever you like doing. Either way, this is Mallory Smart. Tune in next Saturday for an off-the-record episode with John Patrick Higgins. Thanks for listening to the show.